Hello and welcome to the Golf Pro Show. My name is Gary Shaw. I'm assistant professional in Naas Golf Club, Kildare, Ireland. And with me is...
Liam Grehan, assistant pro at the K Club in Ireland.
And you're officially a PGA pro now?
Officially. I just have to be finish off a couple of things to be elected as a member, but I'm graduated all the exams and done and dusted.
Good, man. So welcome to episode 5. It's been a while. Anything major happened over the last few months?
Busy season for the two of us. I played a lot in the PGA region. Nice to have a few wins, finishing in Connemara and Portumna, a couple of good ones. And then played a lot of clutch, which was a great learning experience playing against a good level of full-time player and that. So it's nice to step up the game and challenge myself against them. So
yeah,
it was that. And then back for the Irish Open was quite cool. It couldn't have gone really better. The weather was class. It was brilliant to see Rory and Shane and Padraig, and we'd Adam Scott, Luke Donald. We'd an unbelievable field.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see them take on the K-Club.
So would have been cool to see Rory crown it off at the end, but
yeah, his finish wasn't unbelievable, but
that seems like ages ago now. I suppose
it's a month and a bit, so
it was
unbelievable. Some experience to work that, and we've plenty more coming to the K Club in the next while, so
yeah. Just from my side, we've the inclusive golf and things like that all came to an end, and it was very, very good. Big success. We're working with kids with autism and some in wheelchairs, ex-cancer patients, all that kind of stuff. So very nice to work with those kids. So I'm going back into the schools now a good bit in Naas, the secondary schools, and starting up new programs with women and doing loads of different
plenty
things
on your plate at the minute.
Lots going on. And a busy little pro shop with 1,000 plus members, 1,200 or so. So we're very busy in Naas Golf Club with Bernard Quigley, and Ryan Gribben is there as well, assistant pro. And Dave Hogan sometimes calls himself a pro as well. Great man from Esker Hills. But anyway, today we have a very special guest. Liam is good, probably more acquainted with him than I am.
Yeah, I know Michael well for a long time. He's assistant pro. Michael Kennelly from Glenlow Abbey. He's really been doing great stuff as an assistant. So there's not many people at his age coaching as much as he is in Ireland, so it's kind of cool to hear his take on it and what he's done that led him to some success, and hear his coaching philosophy and who he's learned from. He's really eager to learn and reflects a lot, so he was a good person to chat to, and we're delighted with how this podcast went.
Yeah, it's a really good chat, so we're going to hand it over now to the episode, so enjoy. Michael, how are you?
Good, thanks guys. Thanks a million for having me. Looking forward to it.
Good to hear from you. So we see a lot of you on Instagram, but it's nice to actually meet you. We've seen you on camera there a few minutes ago. Because so, the Wi-Fi is not too strong out there. We dropped the camera, so we're going to stick to audio for now.
But, stereotypical Connor.
West of the Shannon, this regular Wi-Fi. So.
The electricity's still going anyway.
Just about.
So what's your past and present, Michael? How did you end up coming into the PGA and meeting the great Liam here beside me, and what led you to PGA? You said you were doing other things before.
So after, I took up golf for a little bit later than most, but most of us loved it from the start. I just always liked sports in general, just fascinated by it. And so got into that, started to play, probably met Liam playing championships at some point along the way, it must have been.
Yeah, for a while.
Then once I went to college here in NUIG, or University of Galway now, started to improve a little bit more, but I would never say had any plans to make a career from golf or within golf. Never really considered it, to be honest, and was studying commerce, specializing in finance. I actually started doing commerce with Spanish in NUIG, but kind of transitioned into more of a finance stream. And around the same time was, realistically, golf probably started to get worse as I went through the last couple of years in college, and started to help out a bit with the juniors back in Galway Bay, which was my home club at the time. And we were very lucky that for whatever reason, we had a really good junior program. And there was two members in the club, Noel Brown and Shane Francis, who put in a massive amount of work to where we had a huge junior program within kind of a year. And because of my role within that and having helped out doing a bit of the coaching in it, PGA became kind of a logical route because I knew, well, A, I really enjoyed the coaching, and B, I knew there was a little bit of a roadmap towards a business there. So Gary Madden, who had coached me growing up and I'd always got on very well with, spoke to him about doing it in Glenlow, and he was open to it. And then from there, just started to look into it really, and had a good conversation with Donal Scott, who I had got to know very well over like the previous 5 years. And he himself and David Kearney, they were a couple of conversations that talked me into doing it. So over the lockdown, just before I finished college, lockdown had started, and other people were out hitting golf balls, and I found myself on webinars and podcasts and acting as if I was a coach. So I guess that kind of showed me it was what I wanted to do, even though I had never maybe consciously decided that. I was spending my time as if I was coaching, so it became a logical route.
That's deadly. That's an interesting way you kind of weaved your way into the PGA. It's cool that you kind of figured out what you loved about it and then followed it. Deadly.
Yeah, exactly. It was very much by accident, but I, upon reflection now a few years later, I think that's maybe something that I'm really happy about, because it was definitely me chasing a passion at the time more than being stuck for options and maybe like deciding the PGA was the best option for me. It was never really the plan. I had planned to do a master's, like I was saying to you earlier, in Smurfit College up in Dublin. And when I started the PGA, I was fully aware that I might still go back. And I still say to myself, I might still go back and do that, because what I like about this whole thing is that I could at any point not do it. But right now, I'm obviously loving it. So no plans to stop just yet.
You're self-employed, basically, to an extent. Like, you're able to do your own schedule and that. So you can
yeah.
you could probably do the other and still coach and pay your way through the university if you needed to. It's kind of cool to have that flexibility.
Absolutely.
It's very organic, you know, the way
you see your way to it.
It wasn't forced in any way. Which is, I suppose, everyone's dream, that they just kind of find something they love.
So that's class. Yeah. So you started in Glenlow, what was that, 2020, kind of COVID times?
I believe September 2020, if I'm not mistaken.
When I started. So it's kind
of
cool that, like, you'd obviously been coached by Gary, but did Gary kind of lead you through your coaching philosophy, or like, how did you learn, and kind of, was it through trial and error working, or was it a bit of both, kind of shadowing lessons and reading, and or like, you've obviously got a pretty high level of knowledge at this stage, but how did you pick that up?
He won't mind me saying, like, we get on extremely well. We rarely cross paths.
You're busy, like.
You very rarely see Gary. I definitely wouldn't see him once a week. And to be honest, it's almost always been the case that, like, we would talk a lot and that when we see each other. But I guess coaching philosophy definitely was influenced by, and if I go to list people, I'm going to leave some people out. But Gary would have been there. Was also coached growing up by Declan Cunningham, who's here from Galway. Donald, who I mentioned earlier, was a massive influence, because I think at the time he had become really successful in a niche with his putting stuff. And I thought that was, he was pretty much the first person to have like a niche in Ireland that I was aware of, at least. And he was someone I looked up to massively. And I just liked the way he dealt with people a lot. But then in terms of, so they'd have been big influences on how I coached, but not very big influences in terms of what I coached. That was within that first year, I did so many, definitely too many seminars, webinars, podcasts, videos. And
it was a cool year, because it was like Andrew Rice started doing it at the start. Yes. And loads of them opened up.
Yeah. And I signed up for, so because Donor was really my, like, the person who I had probably admired the most at the time, I was like, okay, I'm going to niche. And I did James Ridyard's Wedge Matrix course.
Oh, I was at that.
And it turns out I haven't niched into that at all, but that was definitely the first thing I, that done before I'd even the PGA started. And
that
was really good. Learned a lot from that. That was the start of learning content. And then did some of Scott Couch's pieces. And I've been, like, a lot of people have been very good to me along this journey so far. But Scott has been very, very good to me for someone he's never even met.
So you're still bouncing stuff off him, are you?
Constantly. I call him most months, really. I have a call with him and just discuss through some different things. I'd often, like, kind of go through different players' swings with him and get his feedback. And I do feel like he's been great, because while it's great to have a lot of different, let's say, mentors and things like that, I like that he's been sort of the person I've looked to most from a technical point of view. And that I've a lot of other people's info that I also look at, but a lot of it comes back to my discussions with him.
Yeah, so you have a baseline that you nearly work on
yes,
to an extent.
Yes, yeah. To a point.
That's class. So Scott Couch's stuff is, like, would it be quite technical? I know Andrew Gorman was doing it when I was in the Caitlin, but I'm not hugely familiar. But kind of, can you tell us through kind of the little bit of your coaching philosophy? Or,
yeah, I would say, it's funny, like, I would say definitely the first thing when someone comes in, a couple of people today for their first ever session with me, and definitely the first thing is getting a read on what they want. So I do feel like, I'm not sure if every coach would do this, but I do feel like I change quite a lot depending on who's in front of me.
Yeah.
And because one thing I get a lot of satisfaction out of is if someone will say that was a great lesson and they admire how technical it was, and then if someone the next day might say the same about how simple it was, because a lot of this just comes back to, like, reading the person in front of you. And I feel like a lot of, let's say, what I would now listen to is more along those lines. But back to Scott's piece and the technical stuff, I wouldn't consider it maybe as technical. I feel like once you understand it better, it becomes obviously less technical and almost more simple. But what I like about his is I just like systems. I'm a very structured person, like, in everything I do. And he has his models of swings. So I probably work off maybe 5 main models of his. And I feel like it's a great way to put people into, like, different categories. So not always looking for everybody to move the same, but looking for them to move within a certain pattern, and understanding that there is a pattern that suits everybody dependent on what they want to change with their ball flight.
That's very cool. So it's kind of like, if you see how someone moves, you're not going to change at all, but it's like what fits best on getting it to match up. Is that kind of...
To a point, yeah, definitely to a point. Where I think I've been very lucky, I've been lucky in a lot of different ways, but is a few of the juniors who were, like, the first 2 or 3 people who were part of that junior club in Galway Bay, and who've ended up, well, like, they're still quite young, but they're quite good for their ages and things like that. They happen to move really, really differently. And that's been really good, because I have one of them who moves the club, like, perfectly up and down the line. It's just, like, beautiful. And then another one who's just as good, who moves like Victor Hovland, and club is kind of shallowing a lot and a lot of rotation and side bend. So I've had to learn quite quickly how to make those things work. I'm sure I haven't fully figured it out yet, but getting closer to figuring it out. And that's been, like, great education for me, because all the books and that is fantastic and all the videos, but until you actually do it and mess it up and then figure out what you should have done differently, it's hard to really know, I guess, what the answer is.
It's very cool to do it with 2 aspiring juniors that are obviously at a pretty high level, getting better so quick. So you see what's working and how they're getting better so quick, and that's class.
Yeah, and understanding as well, and it's definitely something I have to do a better job of all the time, is that obviously, like, having the swing perfect doesn't correlate to low scores and winning all the time. And, like, I'd be very upfront about that at the start, because I'm at the start of my journey, I'm going to, like, make some mistakes, and I probably hadn't figured that out well enough at the start of my coaching journey, is that, like, predictability is better than perfection. So actually knowing where the ball is going to go will beat someone who's, like, moving perfectly all the time. And it's trying to balance, good technique with hopefully good mental game, which is a lot of what I'm looking into at the moment, and also just having like go-to shots and things like that to get you around the golf course.
Was there a turning point where you kind of thought, okay, maybe it's not about the perfect swing, it's actually about predictability? And
I couldn't pinpoint the exact time, but I know the more, like, I go to a lot of their events with them, and I just wasn't seeing a strong correlation between winners and best swings. And I do think there's also a side of it that winning at 14 or 15 doesn't always correlate to winning at 20 either. So maybe it's not necessarily those same guys that will keep winning, but definitely it made me look at it in that, yeah, like, it's not all about golf swing, but also understanding, and this is the case with one of those guys, is what makes them enjoy golf is technique. So also, if that's what makes someone like their golf, they love their golf swing, they like golf for that reason, you have to also allow them to, you have to allow them to do that too. So as you know, there's so much that goes into it, and like, we're all very different, and we all change over time as well. It's not just because someone is a certain way, they don't always stay that way, especially at a younger age.
And it seems like at a younger age, it's nice to get the technique at a fairly solid standard, that from there, then you can build on skills and like playing tournaments and getting like tournament ready. But like, if someone has poor technique from the very start, you're kind of capped at a ceiling, I would kind of put it. There's certain shots they won't be able to hit down the line unless they have to change their technique. So it's a good place to start. Like,
for that reason, I feel like coaches who, I left someone out as well in terms of people who've been very good to me. Chris Gallagher, who has just moved abroad, but who was up in Johnny Foster's academy. Very good to me at the start. He was from a similar position to me in that he was probably the next youngest person who was coaching a lot at the time, and also spends a lot of time at the junior events. But he said something before to me about any coach who can get two players to the tour has done a very impressive job. And I think a lot of that links to like being able to basically map out their development, like you were saying there about, okay, when do we prioritize technique? When do we prioritize speed, skill level? At what point do we actually need to make sure they win a bit so that they get a good scholarship to the US, things like that? Like, to actually map out their journey is, well, A, impossible to do because things change over time, but also takes great coaching to actually have a proper plan for them and map out not just the next few weeks of their journey, but the next few years ultimately, and what needs to be done and in what order it should be done.
Brilliant. And then you're able to adapt off that, basically.
Yes.
And how much of that is like the conversation with them, what they want and what like the parents are willing to help them with and all that? Like, there's a lot to work with juniors, and that there's a whole everything happening going through school, and parents can like necessarily pushy parents or trying to deal with all that stuff.
It's so interesting because the other part of the plan is the plan just never goes to plan. So you have to be adaptable within it because you can just never predict at what point they like the game more, dislike the game more. I mean, the first junior, the one who was really the catalyst for all this for me, because he just got a little bit better, a little bit quicker than some of the others, and he was a bit younger. And then he didn't have a very good year last year and basically took 6 or 7 months off straight after it. And I was like, not sure would he play again. And it turns out he has, and he's like starting to put in a lot of effort again now. And I think he'll be a really good player. But it was a good example for me is that when he started the game, literally I was there at the very, very start with him. And I had in my head like mapped out how great he'll be and he'll go to college and all this. And then he's not playing golf for 6 months. And I was like, wow. I would not have seen that coming. And then equally, he came back to golf. I also didn't see that coming. So it was just a very good lesson for me in, yes, having a plan, but also being very aware that the plan will unlikely be perfect because things change constantly because you're dealing with humans.
Yeah. You're not just dealing with golf swings, you're dealing with people.
Exactly.
Do you think that was completely out of your control that he took a break for 6 months? Or do you think there's that, and as a coach, you could support them to come back? Or
I think I was very lucky that it happened when it did, because like, we'd be very close, always have been, and but we'd also like argue a lot and things like that. And
yeah,
if it had happened a year earlier, definitely I would have been on to him constantly, like saying, come on, like you're not practicing. And I was lucky that I, just from being a year more mature and just having seen the game just a little bit longer, I just left him. And like, we'd be in touch the odd time and that, but I was very lucky that I didn't push him away more, which I think I would have done up to that point. And to be honest, if I don't watch myself, may do again with someone at some point. Mm. But I was very lucky like that, that actually the right answer for once was to probably just say very little. And his parents also in that example did a good job of just being ready for whenever he decided that he would like to play again, but not necessarily. I remember having coffee with his mom one day and she wasn't sure either, like how much he was going to golf. But it's just a good example of, it's a long journey. And that's just one example. And it's a kid who's still only 15. So you never know, like they might not play golf when they're 17, but it's all full of examples so far, this journey for me, of unpredictability and just not knowing what lies around the corner. And by nature, coaching, I'm learning, is a very unpredictable job, as you go through levels as well. And even things like job security, things like that nature, they are low in this job because you are dealing with somebody else. So a lot of things aren't in your control.
Yeah. Someone gets just loses interest or falls out, or just like, oh, you're doing it wrong, just jumps to someone else. So there's a bit of competition in that as well.
Absolutely.
In terms and of I've the PGA, been, oh, sorry, go on.
No, well, in terms of the competition side of it, I remind myself this a lot, that when you start out as a coach, almost everybody whoever comes for a lesson to you is coming from someone else first. So it's like, I have to remind myself a lot that I've been very fortunate in that anybody who comes to me has probably trusted me and come away from something that was hopefully a good experience beforehand as well. And it's not something like I take lightly, because the more I do this, the more I understand how, as a coach, like, I definitely value everybody who comes through the door, because their golf normally means quite a lot to them. So they're really trusting you with like a hopefully improving their golf, and like something that really gives them a lot of happiness in their spare time and things like that. So yeah, it is an interesting world of competition, but also there's a lot of golfers, so it doesn't have to be, hopefully I don't think it has to be as competitive between coaches, that there's plenty of golfers there for everybody to do good jobs with, I think.
Half of it even is attracting new golfers in that as well, like beginners to enjoy it as well. So there's a lot of levels to who you're coaching and how to deal with that. And that's kind of one of the questions I wanted to ask you, was like, say like you're coaching obviously some elite juniors, but how do you deal with them versus dealing with like a beginner junior? How do you bring along and like motivate them, or like how do you make it fun that they want to come back themselves without you pushing them as such?
Yeah, so probably just the more I reflect on what was successful around that time when we had a big bunch of juniors in Galway Bay, was it was extremely enjoyable and very fun for everybody involved, even the people who were helping out. And at no point was there a goal of producing good players. And if there was, I was the only person who was thinking that way. Like, it was certainly not the goal of the larger group, but it's a numbers game. So if they're there a lot, and if it's their favorite place to be, and if there's a lot of them, eventually some will be good players. And I just feel with the juniors that maybe I was very lucky with that group, that a lot of their parents weren't overly involved and they were left just have fun. Whereas I do see a lot since then, which I was unaware of at the time, that a lot of parents are like very into results at a very young age. But if it's enjoyable and it's your favorite place to be, if it's your favorite place to be, then you will almost definitely get better at it, because you'll put in the hours, and it won't be through coaching necessarily that'll make you better. It's just purely time and self-discovery and competing. And I think that's the main thing I try and do with the younger kids, is make it really fun. We do a lot in a group with the younger kids, especially the younger kids who play a lot and are quite good players. We get them together quite a bit in a group and just basically let them compete and try and keep technical info to a minimum unless we really have to, because there's a lot of time really for that when they're 12, 13, 14, if they're showing real interest.
Have you dealt with parents that just get a little bit too involved, and how would you manage that as a coach?
Yeah, probably, if I'm honest, probably don't manage it as well as I could. And I think I'm very lucky in that 85% of the juniors I work with, I think their parents are fantastic and not too involved. But there is a small few, and I, to be honest, haven't probably developed good enough systems for dealing with that yet in like the optimal way. But I think the main thing is just about like channeling that energy in the right way, because if they're that sort of parent, they're obviously very invested in their kids' golf, so they will do, obviously in a lot of cases, whatever it takes to make their kid better. So it's about almost like redirecting their intensity into maybe something that could be helpful more than harmful. So maybe I've definitely had a lot of parents and just asked them to observe certain things for me on the golf course, and that if they channel their focus in that direction as opposed to maybe talking to the kid all the time when they're playing, it can be a bit of a win-win. And as a coach, then I get some great feedback at the end as to how things went on the day, and hopefully the kid just gets to enjoy it a little bit more.
That's class. That's really smart. Like your awareness is very high to even be thinking that way, so it's cool to listen to kind of how you're going about it.
Yeah, it's kind of trial and error as well, though. I don't think that was my first thought process. I think I just stumbled upon that one over many other failed ideas before it.
So, like, say with like your group coaching and that, when you're getting the juniors together competing, is that on the golf course mainly, or on the range hitting shots, or is it like skills games, or what do you like to do that way?
Yeah, so for summer I've kind of a new group, because since a few of the guys have gone to America, the group has kind of changed quite a lot and over the last couple of years. So I'm really doing it now at the kids' age, probably 8 to 13. And as mad as it sounds, I do let them steer it massively themselves. So I'll kind of get them all in a group together in a group in the room and say, what would you like to do today? And a few weeks ago, like, I had planned, weather was really bad, classic Galway, and it was hammering rain. And I was like, okay, we'll just do a load of range work. And then in my head, and then I said to the okay, guys, what would you like to do? And oh yeah, golf course. And I was looking outside like, no way. And sure enough, out we went to the golf course, everybody soaked, but it's what they wanted to do. So I just always want them to like feel that it's not me telling them exactly what to do all the time. And like, because that just improves their buy-in and their enjoyment of it. That same day, we do it pretty much monthly with that group, and that same day they're asking, can we do it every week as it's hammering rain? So that's, for me, like, that's the biggest win at their age, is as long as they want to do these kind of things all the time, they will end up good players just by being there. And more importantly, they'll end up actually wanting to play the game for a long number of years, because it's a very enjoyable thing to do. And like, really have that high on the priority list with all golfers, really, not just juniors.
That's class, because like, even like, say I'm just thinking back to like my own development as a junior and just seeing other players, like, I actually don't think I spent enough time on the golf course, especially with coaches. Mm-hmm. I think most of my time was on the range thinking technically. Like, I remember having a pretty good swing as a young lad, but struggling to do it on the golf course in a tournament. So you're kind of simulating that more. Like, you're, half of it is bringing your practice and that from the range to the golf course. But like, what's wrong with doing a lot of that discovery and practice on the golf course, challenges and stuff? So I think that's like, I think you're ahead of yourself with what you're even thinking there.
Yeah, I do think as well, I'm very guilty of this, that if things aren't perfect, like, we gravitate to the teaching bay and to the TrackMan and to the body track and sports box, the 3D stuff, like, we gravitate to all that. Whereas just from talking a little bit to and listening, especially to what Rick Sessinghouse has said about things he did with Colin Morikawa, they did so much on the golf course. And I'm trying to remind myself all the time that you'd rather have a great player than a great swinger. And
100%.
If I was to go back over the last maybe 4 years maybe of doing all this, that probably 5 years now, I would definitely do way more on the golf course. Because when I reflect, before it was ever on purpose, like that time in Goy Bay, we did so much on the golf course. It wasn't necessarily designed practice, and it was quite loose, but I was watching them play so much golf, and I knew their games inside out. Whereas now, it's a lot more driving range, putting green, which is great to a point, but also there's probably not enough emphasis from my side sometimes on scoring. And I think that's what really, really good coaches do a great job of, is just teaching them to score the golf ball better at all levels, even down to 18 handicapper in the golf club. It's really not hard with some good strategy advice, game management, club selection to shave a couple of shots off your game without really having to work on anything technical.
And nearly like a lot of 18 handicaps, if they're focusing on something technical and struggle to strike the ball. So there's a bit of that to it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was talking the other day to a guy called Alistair Spink. He started a thing called Love.Golf over in the UK. And it basically just gets women into golf. But he was describing how they approach it differently to basically general coaching. And they start out on the golf course.
Okay, that's really
their first thing. Wow. They don't go into instruction at all. So his big thing is task and skill. So it's putting the task ahead of the skill, getting them out, get comfortable being on the golf course. So like usually what we do is like 6 weeks of coaching with the women, like with women, a group of women. And then after maybe the 6 weeks, you hope that they join the course or get into golf, that kind of thing. So they spend 6 weeks on the driving range, working on their grip, their stance, their posture, blah, blah, blah. And then after 6 weeks, you're expecting them to walk out to the first tee and feel grand and try and play three holes.
Been there before.
But this is getting them straight out to the course, get used to the golf course, working on their game there, trying to get a score going, all that kind of stuff. And then slowly introduce skills in different ways where you don't even realise that you're doing it.
So it's play to kind of learn that way versus you need to hit down and all that. You give them, put in a lie and like, how do you hit this shot kind of thing?
Yeah, the focus is on the task, not necessarily on the skill. So I was really, really impressed with the way he was going about it. It was very...
Another one I'm just thinking, Michael, off the back of you saying, like, working with all these juniors and then busy teaching them and, like, not doing enough on the golf course. How do you then manage your schedule, say that, like, it's obviously easy to manage booking an hour lesson on the driving range, but if you're planning, like, going out for six holes and the weather is windy, like, do you leave a bit of loo time in between? Like, do you... Or do you do enough of that? I'm just thinking myself, I definitely don't do enough of that, so...
I've, like, massive scheduling issues, to be honest. It's definitely, if there's one thing I haven't got on top of over the last 3 years, it's that. And basically what I do now is Monday to Friday slots. So Monday and Friday I coach at home. I have a simulator here. And most Thursdays I take off. Tuesdays, Wednesdays I'm in Glenlow. I put all those slots online. And within reason, I basically just do regular sessions on those days. So there's nothing really outside of the box. Any of the, not just the juniors, but any of like the lower handicaps or the better players, generally I see them on weekends. It's kind of the same people I see on weekends kind of over time. So I don't have the weekends normally on my online booking. And I do have a little bit more flexibility to work off weather. I see a lot of them about every second to third week. And then it is hard to plan, of course, but basically we're fortunate enough with most of those guys that we have long enough sessions that we can afford to go on the golf course and hit a few balls if needed. And also I'm lucky to see them enough to where if we don't go on the golf course this time, we can do it next time kind of thing. So I guess I'm with those lessons in particular, I have quite good freedom to do what we want. With normal sessions, it's definitely a challenge. And to me, it's a frustrating culture of lessons in this country, but especially where I'm from, the lessons are very short. And I'm guilty of it too. Some of my sessions are 45 minutes. And I just think if we look at successful models of coaching elsewhere, they're normally much longer sessions. Especially first sessions, so that the coach has a better chance to assess the player. And as hopefully I get a little bit more successful and get a little bit busier again. Hopefully the one thing I will definitely do is try and have everyone for an assessment for their first session, including some time on the golf course, because I think it's very tough to listen to someone's own opinion of their golf game and base what to work on off that, because often they don't understand what good looks like at their own level. And I think for the coach to actually see them play, even if it's only two holes on the golf course, would help build a much better picture of that. So hopefully longer sessions become more the norm around here.
That's cool, actually.
So when you take on a new pupil, do they have to do a certain number of sessions with you, or do you pin them down in that way? Or?
No, I would say, again, it's probably a little flaw on my behalf as a business person, is I'm quite poor at ever, like, I would never encourage someone, let's say, to get another lesson. I always leave the ball in their court. But actually, what I've started to learn is I don't think that's actually... I do that maybe to seem like a nice guy at times, but I think sometimes people actually want a little bit more direction. Mm. And I have spent time with a couple of coaches in Ireland who I was amazed that they would see a client and say, for the first time, and say, okay, it's going to take us six sessions to work on this. Yeah. And actually, the response to that was really good, because, well, either the client could maybe decide that they didn't want to, but they actually liked the certainty of the coach and the sense of working towards something, and that they knew it would take a bit of time, but they would get there. I do have programs that I run where I would say maybe about half of the people I work with are on monthly programs. So they've an agreed amount of coaching hours or coaching slots per month. But in terms of people who come for one-off sessions, I know I don't do a good enough job of actually helping map out their journey for them. Gotcha. And something definitely, hopefully next year, I'm going to do a better job of, because I don't think it's benefiting anybody for me to just wait for them to say when they'd like their next session. I think the coach should be outlining that, something I need to do a better job of.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's probably good that, like, that's great, and do it up front, and like they'll buy into it and trust you. And a lot of it is like they're investing in their golf games, that like this will be helping their games for years to come. So it's I think you have to value your own skills and what you're helping them with as well, enough to commit to that.
Yeah, I think I always came at it from the point that I'm lucky enough now that my slots do book up. But at the start, I had five free slots the following week. I always felt it would be not very genuine to encourage someone to book one of those slots if I didn't really feel they needed it. And even if I did feel they needed it, I never thought it would look great. So it's definitely going to be easier to do that now, given that normally the lessons do book up and people have to book a little bit in advance. But if I was going back, it's something, and I was advised this, but I just didn't listen, that I should be, yeah, arranging their next session and like really helping guide them through the whole process, and really like they'll feel more invested in their own journey.
Yeah, we did level two coaching. That was one of, I think Gillian was saying, get the next date booked in the diary. Don't be waiting for them to come.
Yeah.
That's the thing, like having conversations with the likes of Gillian, experienced coaches, like,
yeah,
it gives us a nice direction to learn from. They've done it for so long and to such a high level. Like, you've obviously spoken to a lot from hearing your introduction, Michael, that like, it's not even just the content, it's how you deliver it, how you communicate, how you like structure your development with the player. Mm. So as even just thinking, Michael, like you're obviously very busy, like how do you manage to structure that with even a work-life balance? We were speaking about it a little bit before we started recording. Like,
do you have days off, Michael?
I to be honest, the first year, if I go almost like since I started the PGA, the first year I did, I can't remember exactly, but I might have done two shifts a week in the shop and probably another 40 hours of coaching. Wow. And that was probably, yeah, it was just, Jesus. I was just very lucky that Gary's been amazing with me, and Gary took a little step back from coaching when I got there. So I was lucky to be busy straight away. And it gave me a lot of reps. Like I would say, for the amount of time I've been coaching, I've had as many reps as anybody has ever had at doing sessions, especially because I had done some beforehand. So I definitely worked a lot first year, but I loved it. Like the first year felt like a month. It was
exciting just, and new.
It's so exciting. And yeah. I made a load of mistakes, but there were some good moments. And then I was lucky in year two, I didn't really want to do a lot in the shop. Coaching's what I wanted to do. So in year two, by then I definitely wasn't in the shop anymore. And I probably replaced the shop hours with more coaching. And then last year I talked a lot to a guy from the UK called Alex Clapp, who's a good coach. And I had a Zoom with him one day, and we basically said, how was your day? And I said, oh, I did, I don't know, maybe 12 sessions. And he said, oh, I did three. And then I realized he had earned far more that day than I had. So something wasn't really adding up to me. So
okay.
My online booking system, which has been a really good way for me to say no to people, because I would generally not intend to do that many sessions. I would just fit people in before and after my day. So I still do a little bit, but the online booking has really helped with that. And for someone who struggles, I use Acuity Scheduling, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Again, that was purely because Alex mentioned that one to me. I didn't do any research, but it's been really good for me. So now I have much better structure. I would still like to take a second day off every week, but between trying to balance a couple of days of sessions here at home, and then I need to do a certain amount in Glenlow to keep that going. Right now, I do need to probably work 6 days, but the plan is that within another year, I'll hopefully have a better work-life balance. But I am still enjoying it, so it doesn't feel too bad right now.
You're setting a business going, really. So you kind of can see you digging deep and working hard. Like it doesn't go unnoticed. You can see it online with what you're doing, and obviously you're getting so busy, so it's working pretty nicely.
Yeah, and there's efficiency is a big thing too. So like one thing I learned from spending a bit of time again with Alex was I use Skillist for my lessons. So normally what I would have done is give someone their lesson, go home and do up their Skillist account, write in their notes, put in their videos. And what I realized is it was very easy to do that during the session. And that saves an hour and a half of my day every day now to not have to do that at home. And I need to get a lot better at it, because after we finish this, I have two left to do from today, but I've only two left out of maybe 9 sessions, whereas it used to be 9 out of 9 sessions. So it has still really improved being able to have a little more downtime. But the phone is, and again, I was told this and didn't necessarily listen, but the phone is nonstop. And I have a couple of selfish individuals in America who have no issue ringing.
They'll be listening to this, will they?
Yeah, well, hopefully. And they've no issue ringing at any given time to get a few minutes done over Zoom. But luckily, we're all friendly right now, so it's fine. But yeah, it never really switches off. But I'm lucky; I enjoy it.
Sorry, just on Skillist, Michael, what have you found worked getting that off the ground for you? Was it your Instagram or?
Yeah, it's been very, it's been very up and down in terms of online sessions. I use it mainly I used to use Coach Now just for in-person sessions, and I just switched to Skillist because I was using it for online sessions anyways. But I do feel like there's a lot of work to be done from putting up a post to actually converting that into online lessons. And I would say a lot of the posts I put up are done more out of habit than with a huge purpose, because a lot of them wouldn't really do much to convert things to lessons. But I just like my Instagram account to be active, and it's been a huge help for me growing my business so soon. So I will continue to do it. But I think in terms of Skillist, you have to be a little more forward, definitely. And often even you have to nearly make the first move, which is different compared to a normal like in-person session, I would say. But there is a market there for sure. I just haven't fully cracked it to figure it out yet, but it does keep a couple, there's always a couple sessions there every week and things like that, but there's definitely much more to be had.
When you say make the first move, what do you mean?
So I did a course with a guy called Steve Astle from the UK, and Alex was helping him out, and they were saying that they're big into getting actually following people on Instagram. I don't really do this as well as I should based on their advice, but actually following some people on Instagram, sending them a message saying, how's your golf game, etc. I know what to do. I don't do it. Again, back to the whole thing of not really arranging someone's next lesson at the lesson, I would struggle to be forward like that. It's not necessarily my personality, but I know to get a big online business, it's definitely a good tactic and a good way is to reach out to people, but it's not one I've massively explored yet. But if I ever felt like the online was something I wanted to make a bigger part of my business, based on the advice I've had from them, it's probably the first place I would look.
It's just so you're not really in the pro shop for a good while now.
No, we've a bit of an unusual system in that Gary doesn't spend time in the pro shop either. So often the guys who work in the pro shop in Glenlow aren't in the PGA. So I haven't been in there since halfway through first year, primarily because it made more sense for both Gary and myself, for me not to be, I guess. It was a bit of a funny one, but also it was partially the reason I went to Glenlow, because I knew there wouldn't be a huge amount of shop hours, and it was just not the thing I really wanted to do within the PGA, to be honest. I know some people who really like it. I just didn't, for whatever reason.
Fast-tracked your learning as a coach as well, though. You did so much so early. I'd say it must have helped your coaching big time.
Totally, because I do believe that you can't really... No one can give you the answers with coaching. So even all the technical information is great, but if you don't explain it well, it's not going to make any difference. And also, if you don't really understand what exactly that person wants out of their lesson. So, yeah, the first year, I'm sure I gave a lot of very bad golf lessons, but I was very lucky in that I developed quite a good relationship with a lot of the people I coached. So there's definitely people who I coach now who, if I was to reflect, I'm sure their first four or five sessions with me weren't fantastic, but because we had a good relationship, they've hopefully got to a stage now where the sessions are hopefully quite good and the relationship is even stronger. And that's a really important part of the coach player relationship, is that there's a strong bond between the coach and the player, so that there's a level of trust, which especially is important if things aren't going perfectly at a given time.
The reason I asked just about the pro shop is I hear a lot of pros saying if you're not in the pro shop, you're missing a lot of the footfall to get your lessons. So you're obviously, if you're not seeing members as much or players visiting and all that kind of stuff, you know, I build a relationship with a lot of members behind the counter because I'm there 100 hours a week, or maybe 30 hours a week or whatever. It's a great way to get lessons. So you're obviously doing that away from there. So your Instagram is going to be very important, or you have a different shop front. Your shop front is a bit different.
Well, I don't really coach. I wouldn't say any wouldn't be accurate, but I would say less than 5% of my lessons are from members of Glenlow Abbey Golf Club. So it doesn't really make up a big percentage of my clientele, which is something I've always been conscious of and something I wish was a little bit different, but also it's been helpful in that I know I have a more sustainable business because of it, because I'm not as reliant on where I am per se.
And I see that as a strength,
Yeah, it's a funny one in that I would definitely like to have better relationships within the place I work, because I would love to be able to even see clients win the competitions in the club, and it does happen from time to time, but I don't coach that many of them. So it would be nice to have a better group of players within the club, but I'm rarely, let's say, hanging around the golf club. So our teaching bay is separate to the rest of the range, so I'm basically in there all the time and never really walk the range, things like that. But it was interesting, even a week ago I walked the range by accident because I had to talk to someone who was on the far side of the range, and within that one walk, had like three new people try to arrange sessions. And it was interesting in that I've never really explored that as a way of, like, let's say, marketing before, but actually I wish I had, because I would just like to know as much as possible so that no matter whatever situation I find myself in the future, I'll have a good idea of always what works and what doesn't work. And I probably haven't learned what works well within a golf club, if that makes sense. I haven't really explored those avenues very well to date.
Sounds like you have a nice setup there, you know, doing a lot of coaching.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm very lucky, to be fair.
Since you're so busy playing, Michael, how often, or coaching, how often do you actually get to play? How much do you, like, can you empathize with what the players are going through when you probably don't get a chance to play that much?
It's definitely
we've opposite schedules. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's something like I constantly say I would like to play more, and what I've really had to reflect on is, like, why at this point, why would I like to play golf? And I learned a lot. Like, I only had to play one round, I think it was, this year. And when I played that round and for some bizarre reason played okay, it just did nothing for me. And
wow, okay.
It was at that point I realized, like, okay, I'm not necessarily motivated by score anymore. But I did spend a bit of time with Steve Furlonger, who coaches a lot of long drive guys, and funny, spending some time with him and the thought of getting, like, a little bit faster, that has made me hit some golf balls. But I have understood, exactly. And I would say I would like to play more because, like you said, I'd like to be a bit more in touch with the game and how hard it is. But I need to do a better job of finding out, like, what would be my, let's say, purpose for going out there, because. I also would say that day, the big thing that struck me is I wasn't nervous. So it's very easy to play a tournament if you're not nervous. And
yeah,
I didn't really learn, like, if I had shot 70 or 80 or 90, it may not have made a huge difference as I drove home that evening. So it was, I would need to find a way to also get the nerves back for it to be really beneficial towards understanding what players are experiencing when they're out there in the heat of battle, let's say.
So it's like, what excites you to get out on the golf course, or is it playing in a PGA event, is it like playing in a pro-am with some people to teach, you know, something like that? Could, like, you want
I've actually never played a pro-am. I think I probably will, for that reason, because I would buy into it if I thought, okay, well, three people I teach, I can get to see them play, structure around a golf. Like, back to what we said earlier about actually seeing people you coach play, like, that I can buy into it from that perspective. But from my own perspective, just, like, I'm a very competitive person by nature. So I have come to the realization, like, that playing golf, I'm not going to be, like, very, very good. So it therefore just doesn't motivate me as much anymore as, like, coaching, where I feel like I could be a much better coach than I could be a player, if that makes sense.
I think when you say you haven't played a pro-am, I think I've played 24 this year. Never mind.
We just 24. Not surprised. In August.
Yeah, we've had quite a different experience.
Different schedule, exactly.
And you squeeze in your own bit of coaching as well.
I do. I love coaching. That's why I wanted to have this chat with Michael. And it's kind of, now that we're graduated, it's like figuring out what we want to do. So it's cool to have conversations to like some Michael and other pros, hopefully in the next little while, to open up our minds to what's possible and what we could all learn from. Like,
and the one thing we touched on before I think we pressed record was, definitely I do feel within the PGA, and probably within most industries to be fair, is, like, at our age, you're quite young to be doing something like coaching, let's say. And I do find this a lot, that I'm not sure other people think this about me, but I regularly almost get, like, a little bit of imposter syndrome of, like, at my age, do I know enough to be telling this guy whatever? And it's definitely, I do feel like in 5 or 6 years that will become a little bit easier. So I have a few friends who do the PGA now, and a lot of them have asked me about different things with coaching, etc. And one of them asked me a very good question. couple of days ago, and they were like, if I was going back, would I do it all again, or would I work as hard at the start again? And I probably would, but also I think there's a lot of different routes to get to whatever stage you want to get to within the PGA. Like, definitely, I was lucky. I knew exactly what I wanted to do because I had been able to sample it for 18 months to 2 years beforehand with what I had done before I started the PGA. But I definitely wouldn't rush that journey if I was like in a slightly different position of starting it, because really I think it's by age, kind of like mid 30s, that it's easier to build up a successful business, especially within coaching. I think it becomes a lot easier once we're a touch older, let's say.
You've just had more experience, like you've seen a lot more and like done a lot more reps of teaching as well, so like there's a lot of learning from just going through it. It's cool.
What did you think of the other parts of the PGA, Michael? Like custom fitting, club building, that kind of stuff, or the retail?
Yeah, so the custom fit exam was funny because I had never had... We don't sell golf clubs in Glenlow, so I had never done anything with a golf club before. But I guess it's not too dissimilar to coaching in one sense, is that you have to understand lie angle of a golf club, loft of a golf club, things of that nature within coaching. So I actually left that fitting exam, thinking I really enjoy fitting. I'm not sure I'll ever fit a golf club in my life, but I think I would really like it. And I found it very, very interesting. And retail, I had very little experience in it. The business side of it, from a like exam point of view, was okay, because I had done a lot of similar kind of thing in college previously. But I did really enjoy the sports science side of it, because when I was in maybe fifth year, maybe start of leaving cert, I think sports science was something I was strongly considering, things like physiotherapy, things of that nature. So that's something I did really enjoy. To be fair, a lot of the assignments in the PGA over the couple of years, I did genuinely just like enjoy learning things within them, which was obviously made it a lot more tolerable than if I had hated it. So that was quite nice.
If you weren't in a PGA pro, Michael, what would you be doing?
Presumably finish my master's that I was going to do in Smurfit Business School. I've no idea what I'd be doing right now, because having worked for myself within reason, or like dictating my own schedule at least, I really think I'd struggle with not having that freedom.
The 9-to-5 kind of thing.
Yeah. Now there's certain things, like I would be like probably quite a pessimist by nature, so a lot of the time like I would get irrationally like worried about like, do I have a viable business, things of that nature. So in that sense, I'd probably be a little more suited to working like directly for someone and having someone dictate my schedule or my income. But having done this now, I definitely think I'd always like to have more of an involvement of what I'm doing and have some investment in it, and like be motivated every day to hopefully see whatever I'm doing succeed, whether it be golf coaching or something else.
I'd say a little bit of the uncertainty kind of helps your motivation though as well. Like there's a bit of that, you won't get complacent in what you're doing.
No.
You're kind of stuck in a job for 15, 20 years. You can see it happening a bit more.
No, like kind
of... Go on ahead, sorry.
I would definitely say I never get complacent with it. Probably like the opposite quite a lot, which is something I'm like trying to work on. And like my diary's here beside me, my like reflective diary that I write in every evening. And that's something that makes its way in there a lot, is like to remind yourself you're doing okay. But yeah, it's very interesting, because again, no one can really educate you as to what it's like to like attract a new client, to lose a client, and then they've come back, and to like deal with difficult clients. So there's a lot to it, but I do think it's a great experience for any other type of business that we might encounter over like the next hopefully many years of our lives, whether it be in golf or something else. I do think this industry gives us a lot of valuable lessons, which I didn't necessarily realize at the start, but the more I'm in it, the more I see how applicable it is to other things as well.
So like, looking forward now into the future, for yourself and even in the industry itself, like TrackMan's coming down the roads, you know, more 3D systems coming in, foot plates, all this crack, like so much technology seeping into the coaching realm. Where do you see that going? And do you think the coach is going to be ever more important or less important going into the future? And where do you see yourself maybe in 10, 20 years, 5 years even? Get your crystal ball out.
So I actually had a thought today. At one stage I was doing a lesson and I had the 3D out, I had the body track out, and I had the TrackMan out, and we talked about something for a few minutes, looked at the golf swing, blah blah blah, and the person stood up first ball after the change and hit a bad shot, and I was like, the session thankfully went well, everything all worked out nicely, but I was thinking about it afterwards and I was like, before technology and things of that nature, definitely we had to be as coaches, and I was never there for this, but definitely the coach had to be better at getting instant results, because now it's easy to say, well, the person hit a, they topped it, but their swing path was 4 degrees better than it used to be, so you're doing well. And I'm not sure if it's a good or bad thing. I never really came to a conclusion on it, but it was just an interesting thought I had, that I was like, okay, coaching must have really changed, because now you can almost always point to, oh, well, okay, this is getting better, that's getting better. Whereas presumably a lot of years ago, the only thing that would give you feedback was the golf ball. And I don't have my own TrackMan. We have one in Glenlow. I have a GC3. And I do like those things, but I definitely find myself looking at them less and less as time goes on, because just how well the player can relate to it, sometimes I would question, unless they have a background in like understanding of numbers and things like that. So I do wonder where it will go in terms of, will it become more about technology, or will that wear off a little bit, and maybe like it'll become about just getting like the golf ball to do better things again. But I do really like the, like having the technology. It's like how my brain works is I love information and like going through information and like hopefully coming up with good educated decisions or guesses, depending on how you want to look at it, as to like what to do. And I do feel like it's an advantage to have that information at your disposal, but often the solution can be a very simple explanation, despite all the research that's gone into like diagnosing the issue or whatever.
Brilliant. You're reminding me of Joe Mayo, Michael.
Oh, Jesus. That's yeah, it's funny. He's he's someone I love Victor Hovland, like always have. And he's someone I reached out to a little bit when he started working with Victor Hovland. And like one thing I really like about him is how like he just doesn't accept conventional wisdom for what it is. And like, he's obviously a very curious person and
questions it. Like,
yeah. And like, definitely in my position, and I've listed a lot of people and not listed a lot of people that I could have, like who have a big influence over my coaching and who I really like their stuff. Like, I would love to over time become a little more inquisitive and actually challenge some of those things, like, and that you actually learn for yourself what is true and not true. But like, he has taken certain things that people believe to be true and in his opinion at least disproved them, and I just think it's like a very good trait for anyone who wants to be the best at what they do, is you have to be able to think outside the box, etc. So a few years away from probably being very good like that, but I think it's really like impressive the way he's able to just do his own thing and obviously not care about the pushback.
And you can see, obviously see the results in Victor's short game in the last year or so.
Michael, do you, just before we finish up, but do you have a preference of coaching long game or short game, or putting or chipping or driving irons or or do you any fairly
it
level?
changes all the time, Gary, to be honest. It's I would literally have a different answer to this every 5 or 6 months. I can tell you today I had two putting lessons as it hammered down rain, and putting was not my favorite thing to coach today. I think, like, as I look forward, I really admire putting coaches because it's a very volatile part of the game and, like, quite high variance. So I think it comes with presumably very little job security. I think the guys who coach that have, like, it's very impressive, and it must be tricky, because you can definitely have bigger dips with putting than probably other parts of the game, I would say. But to be honest, I've enjoyed long game a lot more than I thought. But what I would like to do over the next few years is really figure out what I'm best at, and always then have hopefully a good team to cover the areas that I'm weaker in, so that players can get max benefit. But for now, I enjoy doing a bit of everything. There's some people I just coach putting, and there's some people I coach long game but not putting. So right now I'm like doing a bit of everything, but I think over time I'll probably specialize more into one area, just not quite sure just yet.
Brilliant. Yeah, you were talking about specializing in something.
Doing Scott bit.
Yeah.
Putting, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's to be a standout in pretty much anything, I would say within life, is you have to have a certain amount of a niche, because there's just so much information out there that if you wanted to be the smartest long game guy and the smartest short game guy, it just wouldn't be possible to get through all the information. But I do think it is important to have like a rough knowledge of everything, so that you can at least have like suitable discussions with players. But like I've sent a couple of people to Steve Furlonger lately to go get faster, because I thought he was the best at that. So like I think there's always there's probably always someone better in different areas, but it's about hopefully being able to do a very acceptable job in whatever area the player needs.
Brilliant.
Shows you're comfortable in yourself as well to be able to outsource parts, you know. You're aware that they can help them more than you can. Or...
Yeah, I think the player values that a lot, actually. And even to the point where a lot of, to mention Scott again, but a lot of what I would do with Scott is like go through players I coach and go through their swings with Scott. And like, I'm always very, very like open about like that I do that with Scott. And I think the players really like it, because we get a second opinion, and either he challenges what we believe to be true, which is very good, makes me think, or if he agrees with what we're doing, then the player gets even more confidence from it, because they've basically got two opinions saying to do the same thing, and then they really feel like they're on the right path. So it's definitely something that I found very valuable, and I'm just very lucky that he's been quite good to me with his time, and he's been always really helpful so far.
That's steady, Michael. Fair play to you. You're on a winner there. I think the way you're kind of processing just mindset with it all. So it's really cool to chat to you.
Is there anything else you want to elaborate on, Michael, or
any? Where can we find you?
Yeah,
so I'm on Instagram. I think it's Michael Kennelly Golf on Instagram. TikTok, I haven't quite got to.
Yeah, I find
level of fame on TikTok, but I'm getting there. And yeah, just I don't have a website, but I just have an online booking. I don't have a website as of yet, so that's probably hopefully one of the next things to develop, because I'd obviously like to grow my reach a little bit further than just Galway. So that'll be an important part of growing that. But definitely the PGA has been like, well, it's an ongoing journey, but it's an industry that I like really enjoy being part of, as I'm sure you guys do. But I think I definitely think it's suited to someone who really wants to be doing something within golf, and not, as was mentioned to me at the start, some people maybe do it just because they can't think of a different option. And I think the people who really want to do a certain thing, it seems to be quite easy to stand out, because your motivation will be really high to just put in the hours. And like everything, if you put in the hours, eventually there's some rewards there at the end, hopefully.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, Michael, appreciate the chat this evening, and I know it's pretty late. What is it, nearly 11 o'clock this evening? So after a long day's coaching, you've stayed up late and elaborated some skillets with some great answers
to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Wi-Fi held up.
Exactly, it did. It did. We're developing technologically here in the West. We're getting there.
Brilliant. But
thanks
brilliant
a million, guys, for having me. Really appreciate it. And hopefully you keep up the great work with the podcast and kind of get the info out there about the PGA to people. And hopefully people enjoy hearing about it.
So that was a really interesting chat, wasn't it, Liam?
Sure was. Michael's a great lad, and he's a good thinker. He's really giving himself the best chance to do a good job. So it's cool to hear from Michael and learn from him.
And just a little bonus for you guys, we actually stayed on chatting after we hit stop. The chat after was nearly twice as long as the actual chat in the podcast. So
he's some energy after a long day's coaching. Like,
yeah,
we're nearly, yeah, I'd say
he did 9 sessions of coaching today and
then did
straight home
to us for 3 hours nearly. So
yeah, so cool. Just for reference, it's now 1:15 in the morning, so we're running on tea, Barry's tea here, or Lion's tea. So what would you say, what was your favourite point, or did you get anything from it yourself?
It's great how much Michael looks for feedback from other pros. He's like, he's got mentors, he's bouncing ideas, swings, he's learning from a lot of different places and putting it together. It's he's obviously going to do well with the attitude he's bringing to it at the moment. So it's hopefully he keeps it up, and we'll learn a thing or two from him going forward.
Yeah, I found it interesting that he does a lot of 90-minute lessons and 45 minutes. And I find 30 minutes is a little bit tight sometimes, and it can be a bit washy in and out. So you can, like, over 90 minutes, you can really build a good relationship with them and
get to the root cause and
secure, you know, a flow of lessons with the person, so it's just not a quick fix situation.
It's more about the development with the player and getting better over time as well.
Yeah, and it was interesting as well. Like, he never feels too cocky about his ability, even though he's quite clearly very, very able to coach at a very high standard, it seems. But it seems like that kind of drives him, because he wants to get that little bit better all the time. He realizes he can keep improving himself. So it was interesting as well. But yeah, it was a great, great chat. Hope everyone enjoyed it. And I think it's time for the owl labba here in Maynooth.
Yeah.
We're heading for 1:30 in the morning. So early start tomorrow, and we're busy bees as usual.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. And hopefully episode 6 will be soon around the corner. Okay, cheers.